And you're listening to KTO Juno. I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this news update. Health officials announced that another person from Juno has tested positive for COVID-19. It's not clear if the person is physically located in the city, however. The state didn't provide any further information about the resident. To date, 31 Juno residents have tested positive for the virus. The majority of them have recovered. Most of the city's cases came from an outbreak at the Lemon Creek Correctional Center. State officials began testing staff members and inmates there late last week. 165 people were tested and 44 people declined. A Department of Corrections spokesperson did not return emails seeking information on whether the city's latest case is related to that outbreak. Meanwhile, the city and borough of Juno has begun offering tests to residents experiencing homelessness and using city shelters. Three people have reported symptoms and are currently in isolation at Centennial Hall, pending test results. And the Juno Public Libraries will reopen next week with precautions in place to protect staff and patrons from COVID-19. Starting next Thursday, the Valley Library will open during its normal hours. The Downtown and Douglas Libraries will open starting next Sunday. Library Director Robert Barr says staff will wear masks and sanitize surfaces regularly. They've also rearranged furniture and have plastic shields at checkout counters.
We're basically doing the same thing that you see at the grocery stores.
Juno's public libraries closed in March when the state began hunkering down in response to COVID-19. Under Governor Mike Dunleavy's reopening plan, public libraries could have reopened earlier. But Barr says it took some time for staff to figure out the logistics of reopening safely. Part of that involves closing each building for 72 hours per week to allow for a viral deactivation. That's why they've staggered when libraries are open from now.
We did it that way so that one of our larger libraries, downtown or the Valley, would always be open 7 days a week.
Even while closed, staff at Juno's library stayed busy delivering books by mail. Barr says some staff were reassigned to the city's Emergency Operations Center to help with pandemic response, and a few will continue splitting their time that way. Library patrons will have to maintain social distancing inside the buildings and are also encouraged to wear masks, except for children under two. In-person programming, like story time, is suspended for now. And in other news, Alaska communities will be receiving a boost in the coming weeks from federal CARES Act relief, but they still face future challenges in paying for services as they finish work on municipal budgets. One area that won't be funded through the CARES Act are the items vetoed by Governor Mike Dunleavy last month. As Alaska Public Media and KTO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, municipalities are trying to figure out how to make up for that lost money.
Governor Dunleavy described his plan for vetoing line items in the state budget in early April.
You're going to see a number of vetoes, but I will say this. The vast majority of those vetoes, that money, state money that we vetoed, will be replaced with federal money through the approach to deal with the virus, the CARES Act.
Some who responded to the vetoes expressed skepticism that this was possible. They said the federal guidance on how states could use money from the law was unclear. Since then, federal guidance has said states can't use the money to backfill items like those Dunleavy vetoed. While the federal government may offer more flexibility in the future, Dunleavy's administration wrote its plan for CARES Act funding without paying for the items he vetoed. And the legislature didn't take up the issue of the vetoes during the 3 days it reconvened in Juno. That leaves municipalities in a challenging position. Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Bill Roberts described what the borough is facing to House Finance Committee members in a recent meeting. Roberts says the biggest impact to Kodiak is from two vetoes: to state funding to reimburse municipalities for paying off bonds to build schools, as well as direct assistance to communities.
I think it's going to be incredibly hard for the people of Kodiak, for the residents of Kodiak, to backfill the bond reimbursement and also the community assistance.
Kodiak's Borough Assembly is considering raising property taxes roughly $600 per year for someone who owns an average home, in part to make up for the vetoes. The vetoes of school bond debt reimbursement totaled $100 million, and the community assistance veto was $30 million. State aid is particularly important for Northwest Arctic Borough, which can't increase money from one of its major funding sources. It receives a fixed amount under an agreement with the Red Dog mine operator. The Alaska Municipal League estimates that Northwest Arctic Borough lost more than $4 million from the veto of school bond debt reimbursement. Borough Mayor Lucy Nelson described the impact.
This poses a significant problem and must be fixed because we cannot impose additional taxes on our residents as they are economically distressed and our land is not taxable.
The Dunleavy administration did take steps to increase CARES Act assistance to Kodiak Island and the Northwest Arctic boroughs. After the mayors provided testimony to lawmakers, the state increased CARES Act funding by nearly $2 million to Kodiak and nearly $3 million to Northwest Arctic. But with restrictions on how municipalities can spend the CARES Act money, some local leaders are concerned about their budgets. Matanuska Susitna Borough Mayor Vern Halter.
There's just a lot of people that are going to struggle to pay property taxes. The economic devastation to the oil industry, and somebody mentioned tourism, which is huge here in the Matsu Borough. And the devastation to small family businesses is hard to imagine.
Halter says he'd like to see the legislature pass funding for municipalities in the future, and if they do, he hopes the governor won't veto it. Earlier this month, after the mayors provided their testimony, Dunleavy described how he would approach it if the legislature were to pass the money again. He says the price of oil will have a bearing on the entire state budget, and he'll have to talk with the legislature about what the state can afford.
How are we going to be able to support the government at the size that we have right now and the expenditures that we have, the services and programs? How do we want to go about doing that?
Alaska Municipal League Executive Director Nils Andreasen says cities and boroughs are still working to understand how the vetoes combine with increased spending and lost revenue from the pandemic, as well as the CARES Act money.
The vetoes do have an impact. There will be local governments that just can't make that up out of what they're able to do with the CARES Act funding within their budget or through using savings or reductions to budgets.
Andreasen says all levels of government are faced with tough choices. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And now to Ketchikan, where a woman's cross-country cycling trip inspired her to find a novel way to give food to people in the community in need. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the novel distribution method requires limited contact, making it the perfect solution in a pandemic.
Back in 1999, Ketchikan pediatrician Elisa Rozier rode her bike from Seattle to Washington, D.C. As she pedaled from coast to coast, crossing Washington State and making her way into Montana, she came across a box full of free food.
It was just a spot in town that everyone knew that this exchange could be done.
She says she noticed more as she made her way through Wyoming and South Dakota, and it got her thinking.
And I just, going across the country, I just thought that was a really cool idea.
Rozier kicked the idea around for a while, but 20 years later, the idea has some new urgency.
Recently, with the pandemic, and just thinking about being able to exchange food in a non-contact way.
So Rozier thought back to the boxes she'd seen on her trip.
I kept thinking about it. I was like, that would be really cool if we could get one here.
She found a national organization, the Little Free Pantry Movement, that shows more than 1,000 boxes full of free food all over the country. It's based on the similar Little Free Library movement, in which people host boxes full of reading material for anyone to borrow. But there weren't any Little Free Pantries shown in Alaska, so Rozier decided to get Ketchikan on the map.
And so I reached out to Holy Name, where I'm a parishioner, and asked them if they would be interested in housing a Little Free Pantry there. They said, sure.
One problem, Rozier is a doctor, not a carpenter. But the church's secretary put her in touch with parishioner Larry Jackson.
I said, yeah, that'd be great. It'd be a great project for me and the kids to do together.
Jackson says he took some spare wood, made a few cuts, and drilled a few holes. He says he was able to teach his kids a little about carpentry and a little about life.
It's kind of that, trying to teach them that there's a social giving back component to life. So
Rozier says she initially stocked the Little Free Pantry with some surplus food stocks at the church. She's planning to check on it weekly. She encourages anyone with a few extra canned goods to drop them in the pantry. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
And taking a quick look at the weather, it's 59 degrees in the capital city. Tonight, it will be cloudy and some rain will start rolling in. And for tomorrow, highs near 53. You're listening to KTOO.